You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a weekend special edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm one of the co-hosts of this wonderful show. On today's podcast, it's all me, all alone, but I'm going to do something interesting. We are now in full offseason mode. There is one last move left for the Pacers, presuming they sign somebody to the room exception or some kind of minimum deal. I believe they have two roster spots left, but they'll probably leave one open for, you don't call it spring training, but training camp, I guess is what it's called. I'm thinking baseball in my mind still. So, with that being said, the Pacers roster is pretty much locked in. I mean, the guy they get with the room exception could be a decent player, could be the 10th man off the bench, whatever. But in terms of the guys they have now, they know they're top eight, top nine. What I want to do for this podcast is go through player by player and talk trade value. I know it might be early to consider trades because really you can't do anything, but I think with the moves of Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul, Paul George, I mean, just a lot of guys obviously have moved teams this year, whether free agents or not, that the league is always fluid, and I would expect once December comes around, there will be a bunch more kind of superstars, maybe not superstars, but guys in the 10 to 20 to 10 to 30 range of ranking of players wanting to move teams. And the Pacers, because of the players they have, are in a good position to make those kind of moves. But I'm going through each player on the team. So I'm going to go all the way from the bottom guy on the roster, who I consider like either an Alize Johnson, probably the bottom player in terms of value, to all the way to the top, up to Victor Oladipo. So I'm going to start at the bottom. So I'm going to name a few players here. So I'm going to do Alize Johnson, Edmund Sumner, TJ Leaf. I don't think either of those three players has any positive value, any second-round pick value. That's kind of the barometer of, like, can you get a second-round pick for a guy? Meaning that, basically, will a team take their contract and you get kind of a faux asset? Because second-round picks don't really mean much. It's kind of a throw-in. Like, it kind of helps you grease the wheels on a trade, let's say. I don't think any of those three players can get a second-round pick. I think you might get one for Sumner or the Leaf. Maybe. I doubt it. But it's not expected. I mean, Alize second-round pick, Sumner a very late second-round pick. Leaf value dropping below second round is kind of disappointing. He said he was the 18th overall pick. But for Sumner and Alize, the fact that they probably couldn't even fetch a second-round pick right now is fine. Not a big deal. Leaf's the one that's disappointing. As friend of the pod, Gary will say, you couldn't get him for a bag of chips, probably. So, yeah, I mean, I think all three players have value in a sense that they could be put in as fillers in a trade or put kind of as the cherry on top, you know. Hey, we want to get this guy. We'll give you X super, X top three player, X number seven or eight guy, and we'll throw in a first-round pick and a TJ Leaf or an Edmund Sumner. You know, we like him, but we'll give you a chance to kind of see how young he's developing, which, why don't you take a shot in him kind of thing. I don't think any of them move the needle anywhere. I don't think any of them make teams look up and say, oh, I want to trade for that guy. I think they're just kind of players. But that could change. I think Sumner's a real chance to prove himself to be at least a rotation player. And if he does that, he will have positive value at 23 years old, a guy who arguably would have been a higher pick if he didn't tear his ACLs last year of college. He's a really good athlete. There's a lot of concern with his knee. If he can turn into kind of a rotation player, especially because of his length and his ability to play point guard, Sumner has some real value. The other two guys, Johnson and Leaf, I don't see Leaf having value. I don't see Leaf having a better season, but if somehow he did, I guess he'd get value because an 18th pick, you know, people are always willing to give first round picks another shot out there. So next on my list, Next on my list will be TJ McConnell. He's not signed up by the Pacers. He's estimated to make about $3.4, $3.5 million. Trade value, first of all, I don't think you trade him. He's got a two-year contract. You bring him in for a specific reason. I don't believe it's all guaranteed any of the years. Maybe first is guaranteed. I'm going to look up the next year. It hasn't been official yet, so we don't know what the second-year guarantee is to it. Let's put it that way. But I believe it was not. So, you know, he probably has, again, minimal trade value. I like some of the flashes he showed in Philly, obviously. He's obviously an undersized guard. He can probably provide kind of, he's the perfect, not perfect, but a pretty solid kind of third point guard for your roster to be behind a Brogdon and then behind a Holiday and then him. And he allows you to kind of go small at times to maybe put Brogdon at the two or put Holiday at the two, whatever it is. So I don't think, maybe doesn't have, I don't think he might have a second round pick trade value, let's put it that way. I think that could be for a team, you know, if you're in a full rebuild mode with the Pacers, they're saying, hey, we're just selling everybody because we're not going to win this year. You could probably fetch a second round pick, maybe some protections, maybe some like reverse protections, maybe get some cash for him. I don't know. You probably can't get a player for him. I don't think there's any player you could trade McConnell straight up for unless it's like a guy like a TJ Leaf on another team who has just like been bad and the other team wants to turn to a player they can use now. But overall, I mean, I don't think that's bad for McConnell. Do I see his trade value going up per se? I mean, I can't imagine. I think he's rightly paid in the right position, and I think the only way he really gets traded is the Pacers really are either in a – he just – well, even if he stinks, he's not going to be able to trade it. So really, they have to be in a full rebuild mode kind of process. Or like, we don't need that point guard. Or I guess if Sumner sort of became awesome all of a sudden, you said, you know what, we don't need McConnell. We'll give him to a team because we just want to clear the guy so we can have the extra kind of like minutes. But McConnell also might be a guy who's just saying, hey, I know what I signed up for. If the rookies pass me, they pass me. I'll sit on the bench and you can cut me next year and I'll go find another team. So those are kind of the bottom guys on the roster. I think as you work your way up, you start to get some positive trade buzz. So next guy on the list is Doug McDermott. I think he's the first player on the Pacers roster who has actual trade value to a team. That means that he can get a second-round pick, then he can fetch you a player depending on the move. I think the best move for McDermott, obviously, for the Pacers want to get rid of him, is a Leaf-McDermott pick. Gets you about $10 million worth of money you can trade off of. It's... the pick helps grease some wheels. I think the second round pick, and maybe you can get an actual player. You know, I don't know if we're talking. I mean, I was thinking you get rid of him, send him to a team that has any space, and you sign a guy. So, like, what did Morris get? Morris got, which one? The Morris brothers got 2 for 20. Or he ended up getting 1 for 15 with the Knicks. But that was kind of what I would like to see them do. Made that kind of move. Obviously, they didn't. It was Marcus Morris. He got 1 for 15 with the Knicks, but he originally signed for 2 for 20 with the Spurs, which would have been the nice move for the Pacers if they could have gotten off McDermott's contract. I think there's a chance you might have, like I said, have to attach something to him in order to get it off. In terms of players-wise, you know, the salary is not enough where it, like, gets you a solid player or, like, a team without, you know, giving up something of value to get a player back, per se. But it is enough of a salary where it fills in trades. So, like, if you piece some things together... you know, Pacers have a couple $10 million contracts. They've got a $17 million contract. They've got a $20. They could have a higher one with Sabonis next summer. Like, you piece those with McDermott together, and you sort of create a trade package with some picks that actually has some real value, can match salaries for bigger guys. That's what I see McDermott's value as. I don't see him as a straight-up. I don't think any team just wants him. I think teams value shooting, but I think teams see McDermott, realize he's overpaid. He's probably more of a $5 million a year kind of guy, even less. They don't like this. You know, if he was on expiring, he'd probably have more value. So maybe next season he has more value because – only have 1 year left. But I think overall he's not a bad player. I think he's just overpaid a little bit, and I think he necessarily doesn't get you any, doesn't, you know, you can't upgrade him without attaching something of real value, like a first round pick or, you know, maybe a Leaf. And Leaf is not real value, but if you do Leaf, but still add a second round pick. So you're putting something in to get off McDermott Connor to use that money for something else. That's the idea with him. The next player on the Pacers sort of I have on the ranking trade list is Jeremy Lamb. I guess right now I'm pretty much going up by salary. That's mainly because they've actually paid guys on their value. It's ironically, like, well, I guess Sabonis is the only one I haven't gone yet. And so he has way more value than his current contract. So Jeremy Lamb at $10.5 million, rightly paid. I don't think they overpaid him. Maybe you're talking a million or two. Maybe you thought he should have got, you know, 3 for 24 or whatever. But, you know, there was the everybody's cap space kind of tax, the small market tax, whatever you want to call it. I think he's a good value at that. I don't see him need to be traded. I think, again, like McDermott, and I'm gonna bring Warren to this too. Warren, who makes $10.8 million. I think all three, McDermott, Warren, Lamb, are kind of players where they have value for your team. They can be really good. They can provide, you know, they provide the depth that you kind of want. They give you that 1 through 8 that you need. But if you see an opportunity to go after Bradley Beal, I mean, we're talking, that's kind of the next probably description superstar, I think. But, you know, that kind of opportunity, then you take it. You know, you package those guys together with them first, and you go make the move, because ultimately having the superstar is better than having those three guys, but they're still really good. I guess in terms of lesser value, like, could you get a first-round pick for Lamb or Warren? I think, you know, we just saw Warren basically get sold for free, so I don't know if you get, I don't know if you could turn around and flip him for a first-round pick. Now, I will say Sam Presti of the Thunder seems to do a really good job of constantly being able to flip guys and flip guys and flip guys around. So essentially, he basically turned Serge Ibaka into Oladipo Sabonis, which turned into Joe, turned into like 8 first-round picks. So maybe that's something they should do with Warren. No, I think they have more value on the team. You know, maybe you could get a late first for a Lamb or Warren. You know, if we're talking, if you're in full rebuild mode when it comes to time in February, and you got a team that is, you know, in desperate, you know, wants a player for the rotation in the playoffs, you could do that. They aren't buyout candidates or anything like that because they've got too many years on their deal left. I believe Warren has 3 years and Lamb has also has 3 years on his deal. So, you know, I think both guys will be on the team for a long time. I don't think you're going to end up – I think both guys play out the duration of their contract, barring something crazy where some big, giant kind of superstar shows up on the market that they can get with all these guys. I love to see what Warren Lamb can do. I think they add a new dynamic to the Pacer team. I think as guys who can score on their own and have kind of their own ability to create their own shot, it's different. You know, I think we'll be interested to see if they can fit Warren Lamb into the limit of the Bojan role where they just let him kind of to run those side actions and get kind of in popping or catch and shoot kind of ability almost. I guess Bojan was a little more catch the ball, two dribble shoot. But I wish they could run those kind of offenses through him, or they can get the ball in their hands and let them kind of control the offense. You know, it'd be nice to see that the Pacers have some other playmakers for a change. I mean, really a lineup I like of Oladipo, Brogdon, Warren, Lamb, Turner, that provides a lot of offense. Defensively, that's a worrisome lineup, but I trust the Pacers' infrastructure to be able to coach up defense. They've done it year after year. They do it team after team. They bring guys in you never think, and they end up playing good defense. Bojan's the latest example. You know, we go back to a guy like Lance, who Lance in his peak was playing really great defense for the Pacers. And this guy hasn't been able to really figure out how to play defense since because he doesn't pay attention enough, but the Pacers really kind of got him, kicked his butt to play good defense. So I think they can do it. I think I trust the defensive infrastructure of the Pacers. I think it's kind of similar to the Spurs, who trust themselves to always be able to, you know, create good shooters because they have a good shooting coach. I think the Pacers have the ability to always create good defenders because they have great defensive coaches. I'm going to take a quick break because I do not want to go into some of the bigger name guys until after this break. All right. I'm going to flip a coin in my head. All right. Welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. So I'm going to take Sabonis first and then Turner second in terms of trade value. I think they both have a lot of trade value. Now, this is where it gets interesting. So I'm pulled up kind of the PER, which is not the most perfect stat in the NBA, although last year, if you look at PER, the leaders were Giannis and Harden at 1 and 2. Now, Davis, who I don't know, he didn't play enough games, in my opinion, to matter, but then Jokic, Towns, Embiid, Kawhi, LeBron, Vucevic, Gobert. I mean, isn't the perfect stat? Like, Durant was 13. Ideally, Durant should be probably a top 3, and I guess you have George is like 20 on the PER list. But, ironically, somebody named Domantas Sabonis ranked 23 in PER in the NBA, which is really kind of odd. The highest ranked Pacer by far. Second one coming in was Turner at 57, I believe. Maybe a Darren Collison in between there. I'm trying to remember now. Nope, Turner came at 57, Collison 73, Thad and Bowen 81, 82 in terms of PER. I think Sabonis' value is going to increase once he starts playing big minutes. I think as long as he can stay out of foul trouble, I think they'll figure out the defensive end of it personally. I think they'll play him with a lot of the bench units still, so he'll be okay, depending on how Goga does. But I think Sabonis is going to start to kind of skyrocket his value because he's going to be, you know, in terms of true shooting percentage, I believe he was in the top 10 in the league. So 15 in true shooting percentage. He led the league in overall shooting percentage for a little while. You know, I know he eventually that fell off. Like field goal percentage-wise, let's see where he ranked. I forget where he ranked. Oh, that's the wrong stat. He ranked number 7. So I think he's going to have real value if he can get his minutes up into the 30s. You know, we're talking a guy like, you know, Clint Capela level who averaged like 17 and 12. Now, maybe he's not putting up that. I think he's a better scorer than Capela kind of level, but I think he could be more like a, I think he could be more like a 17 and, I don't know, 9 kind of guy. I mean, that's what he did 14 and last year. I mean, if he's 17 and 9, that's going to have some real value to some teams. Then it'll become the factor is he worth too much to trade because he's better off being on your team, especially if him and Turner work together. It doesn't really matter. Turner, on the other hand, I think also will have a decent year. I think Turner is going to have a harder year because it's going to be on him to fix kind of the defensive flaws in the lineup at times, and I think that's going to be a struggle for him. I think, like I said, if they stick with it for a year, they can figure it out. I think they have two smart players. I think they have two players who are talented, and they can figure out how to stretch the floor at times when they need to, but go to bigs and kind of bully teams around offensively, and Turner has to become still a better kind of not taking the 20-foot jumper and just being kind of a overall more confident shooter. And he's got better than in the year, so there's no knock on that. It's just about getting better, right? After year, he's both Turner's bones are young enough where they have to keep getting better. However, I think honestly, I think Sabonis will have more trade value than Turner. Now, we'll see what he signs an extension with. If he signs the same deal as Turner, then I don't know. I think Turner's a better player at this moment. I think Sabonis has more potential, has a higher ceiling, per se. I think he could become, like, at least offensively, I think Turner's defensive ceiling, we'll see if it can get higher. I think it's maybe starting to level off, which isn't bad. I mean, you know, leveling off is like the fourth best center in the league. It's pretty good as a, I would say, a borderline top 10 defender in the NBA. I guess, I mean, problem is wing defenders are just such more, so much more valuable than centers, but he's becoming a decent perimeter defender last year, so there is that to him. But I think Sabonis has a higher ceiling for trade value. I think if you don't sign to an extension, he has a huge trade value because the contract is super cheap and you can fit a lot of guys in it. I think you could probably feel in this year's draft, you could have filled probably a top 20 pick for Sabonis, maybe a top 10. I mean, I think, I don't know if I would have traded anything really outside the lottery for Sabonis. I think I would have thought about a top 5 pick if I was thinking about Turner. So Turner, I guess, you know, I think for both the guys, I think if you got, yes, they were probably talking 7 or 8. Like, I'm thinking the Hawks had the 8th pick, if I remember right. I think if that pick for Sabonis, you might have done it. I think if you, the Pelicans traded 4 for Turner, you might have done it. Like, that's where their values are right now. I just think Sabonis in the future has a higher trade value ceiling because he can be an offensive guy. And those kind of, you know, if you're a 17-point-a-game guy, those just kind of pop to teams, you know, especially teams that don't have a center. I think the ceiling of Sabonis' kind of trade value right now is like a Jaylen Brown for him flip. I don't know if I'd be opposed to that, honestly, right now. I think that might be the, kind of the right move. I think Brown has a lot of potential still. I think him is both kind of the same boat where they both had really awesome second kind of seasons. I think, honestly, Jaylen Brown had a better second season than Brown, kind of leveled off. Last season was a disaster in Boston. I think they also want to see what he can do with kind of a better chemistry. I think the patient wants to see what Sabonis can do when he plays with Turner and can have better, more minutes and really be in a more comfortable lineup, you know, this time, you know, without playing out like Tyreek, but playing with good players. You know, when Sabonis played with the starters in previous years, he was awesome. I mean, we're talking games where he put up 30 points sometimes, where he was, you know, closing out games. I mean, Turner was hurt for a good stretch of 2 years ago, and that's when Sabonis really shined, was he had like a nice stretch where he basically missed a shot for 3 or 4 games. So Sabonis, when he plays with good players, is awesome. It's just whether he can stay on the court in terms of foul trouble. Remember, he only played 25 minutes last year. He averaged 3.2 fouls. I mean, that's part of the reason he wasn't able to be on the court. I mean, look at fouls. He also ranked number 12 in fouls. Now, so did Giannis. Giannis was tied with him in fouls per game. But Sabonis, it seemed like, you know, was always getting foul trouble, forcing them either to play Turner or forcing them to play O'Quinn at times. So this year might be different because they have Goga. So if he gets foul trouble, we might see some Goga, which might be a good thing in the long run. I don't know. I guess I didn't do Goga's trade value simply because I don't think you trade your first-round pick, honestly, in its first 2 years, unless you have a chance to get, like, you do like a Shea for Paul George type of thing, Shea Gilgeous Alexander. I just don't think you, I think you just don't do that because you don't know what you have until about year 3. And after that, you can at least have an idea of the player is going to be, if the payment at least next. But the first 2 years, rookies are so cheap and you just don't know. I mean, there's a chance Goga could be Rudy Gobert for all we know with a jump shot. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's probably not going to happen. I mean, I don't, you know, that's a pretty freaking high ceiling. If you were to get over the jump shot, might be the best. Might pretty much Joel Embiid it, kind of, in a way. But who knows? So I don't think you trade your first round pick in the first 2 years. Next player. So now we're getting into some of the, well, we're really getting into the last two guys, right? So let's do this. Take one more break, and then we'll talk about Brogdon and Oladipo's trade value. Welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. I did not forget Aaron Holiday. Don't worry, guys. I did not. I think I left him for this segment because I think he is one of the most intriguing trade assets for the Pacers have. I think the three most intriguing assets are Oladipo, Brogdon, and Holiday because they can fetch probably the highest yield. Now, you might say, you make a case Sabonis Turner has higher trade value than Holiday. I think Holiday's contract helps. I think the fact that he's on a rookie deal is just something teams, you know, teams can give up a lot of picks for those kind of players without having to give up a lot of money, per se. I mean, I think a lot of teams would trade for Holiday. I really think the Grizzlies probably wanted Holiday and Sabonis, and that Conley trade would have gotten done. And I think Holiday has a chance to really shine this year. I think he looked pretty good in Summer League. I think he's finally figured out his shot now. I think the Summer League game, he dominated because he's honestly one of the best, you know, 9-10 players in Summer League, and it probably looked slow to him. The question is, will the NBA look too fast to him again? I think at times it did. But I'm excited for Holiday. I really think he has huge potential. I think offensively he could just be a fucking gold mine in terms of just being able to, sorry for cussing there, but can just, I mean, I think he could be a kind of guy who just hits 4 or 5 like just unbelievable threes per game. I mean, we're talking because he's going to be kind of like the third or fourth option at times if they play him with the right lineups. He's going to be kind of the overlooked guy that he will just have a chance to burn lesser defenders. Now, as he gets better and if he becomes sort of the number 2 guy in a couple of years, that might not be good for him. But I think as a third or fourth option on a court at all times, he's gonna have some fun, because I don't think they're gonna put the best guard defensively on him most times. Now if they do, that's good for other guys, right? If they put the best guard on Holiday and they play on the Oladipo, yeah, that's the team's own mistake. But I think Holiday's going to have a good season. I think his trade value is probably higher than his pick. I think you could have got a top 15 pick for him. I don't know if you could have gotten the top 5, but top 15 for sure. I think you could get with him and, you know, $30 million of contracts get you a max player, I think, without probably giving up a first-round pick. So, you know, I think if the Pacers went to the Wizards and said, we'll trade you Aaron Holiday, Miles Turner, Doug McDermott, I believe that matches salaries right, and we'll give you a first-round pick, they could probably get Bradley Beal. I don't know if I'd do that, to be honest. I think you have enough guards for the Pacers, but I think that could move the needle. You might throw in like 2 first-round picks, but I think the Turner, Holiday, McDermott could be enough to get Bradley Beal. But I don't know if I'd make that trade, to be honest. I think that's giving up too much in terms of just what do you have left in your team? You have a bunch of guards, which isn't very good for your roster. On to Brogdon and Oladipo. So, Brogdon's trade value, well, both Brogdon and Oladipo's trade value depends on their injuries, right? Brogdon had that foot injury. There was some concern that it was going to be a lingering issue. We'll see. I don't think the Pacers are as concerned about it, clearly. That's why they signed him a 4-year deal. Oladipo returned from his injury. He looked pretty good with that jump shot at Summer League the other day. He was at Indiana, right? He was back for some IU thing. Whatever it was, he had a pretty nice looking three from like probably 30 feet out. His knees look fine. Maybe he'll play by the first game of the season. I don't know. We'll see. He seems like he's progressing well. But I think if the Pacers were to say, okay, we want to tear it all down, we want to start from scratch, we think Oladipo's going to leave in 2 years, we should just do this right now, what could they get? I think Oladipo fetches 2 first-round picks. I think if he comes back and looks anything like he did last year, even 2 years ago, I think teams say, oh, this is a superstar. If we get him, whatever. I mean, could you convince the Knicks to trade you 3 first-round picks for Oladipo? You might be able to. Could you get Kevin Knox in the deal? You might be able to. Now, I don't know if it's enough value, because it's hard to get superstars. Superstars are hard to get. The Pacers were lucky, frankly, to flip a superstar for another one that nobody knew about. You need that first superstar to get the second one. You need that first superstar to, you know, you need a superstar to win any kind of games, to make a playoff run, really, in the NBA. So I'm not advocating for Oladipo to be traded at all. I would never advocate for him to be traded. I think he has potential if he can stay healthy, put a 2 or 3 run here where he could be a borderline top 10 player. I think he's an awesome offensive player. He's just in terms of beating guys off the dribble. I think he, you know, has some of that Westbrook athleticism without the selfishness of wanting to take stupid amount of shots. I think he plays awesome defense, and that's a huge plus too. So in no way am I saying they should trade Oladipo, but like if you could get Damian Lillard for Oladipo, you probably do that. I mean, that's the kind of move you make per se. Brogdon has less value. I think Brogdon's probably a top 40 player, not a top, maybe even top 50, probably not a top 20, where Oladipo is borderline. Right now, we'll see what the SI rankings do when they come out in September. I think Brogdon probably fetches you probably a first-round pick still, if not 2. I mean, you saw he got traded for a first-round pick in 2 seconds, but essentially with the Pacers having most of the leverage in that situation, he still gave up that much. So Brogdon, I don't think I would trade. I think there's an interesting conversation if you could get Brogdon, put Brogdon, Holiday, Sabonis to go after like Drew Holiday. I think interesting conversation, but I think Brogdon is a good building block. I think you're going to make a move. I think you're hoping Oladipo, Brogdon on your 1-2, and then you can make a move with one of your centers, to be honest. That's where I would look if I'm the Pacers. Okay, they're making any moves. First off, I would just run this season and see what happens and give it 3 or 4 months and see if the guys fit. And if they really don't fit, it's going to be a disaster. Then you blow it up. In terms of you just start moving on the edges, like you start trading one of your top 3 guys. But I think really probably give it a year before you even talk about making any other move. I think your team is sort of set right now. Maybe on the margins you add a guy here, you know, through a trade or whatnot, but I don't think you're trading any of your top, even your starters, really any of your top 6 or 7 guys. But like I said, Brogdon could probably fetch, you know, a 20s first round pick, maybe 2 of them, maybe a first round pick and a player, you know, to match salary. I don't know. I think they're the 2 most valuable players on the Pacers roster currently. I think if you're ranking them, just top of my head right now, I would go Oladipo, could get the most value, Brogdon number 2. Sabonis 3, Holiday, Sabonis 3, Turner 4, Holiday 5, Warren 6, Lamb 7, McConnell 8, Sumner 9, Leaf 10, Alizé 11. Goga, I'm not counting because I don't think they're going to trade Goga, but Goga probably falls actually more like in the right before the Leaf and Johnson kind of class. I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. I hope you enjoyed this trade value one. I'd love to hear what you guys have to think. what you guys are thinking of. You can follow me at FreedomAdam5 and tweet at me. You can tweet at our podcast, Locked On Pacers. We are going back to once a week for the offseason. We're going to figure out how to do some more interesting shows. Tony and I are going to have a brainstorming session on Sunday about sort of how we want to do the offseason. I think it might be at mailbag time at some point, so look forward to that. We might do some like voicemail call and leave like a voicemail question and we'll answer it kind of thing for the fans out there. I know we did some fan shows last year, but those were hard to organize, so we might not do those again. But we love hearing from you guys. We love interacting with you guys on Twitter. So just keep kind of doing that because we honestly what keeps us kind of going, and we'll do once a week probably till now until late September. Then when the preseason starts, we'll kick back into full gear and we'll have an NBA season, and then we'll do the whole routine over again. We'll go seven more months, hopefully to make the playoffs, make a playoff run, and then we'll come right back to free agency next year. I know, time just keeps moving on. That is all for Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.